Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Planet Federal. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Three-fourths of the Earth is covered with water. You've known that since grade school. It's why maritime domain awareness is so important to a variety of federal agency missions, from the Navy to NOAA. One way to understand the oceans is to observe them from space. For more, I spoke with the branch head of the Space Systems Development Department at the Naval Research Laboratory, Alan Hope. And our general topic is maritime awareness, and that's a pretty broad topic. And your specialty is space. And I guess it's probably obvious, but maybe describe in current contemporary terms what the role of space work is in maritime domain awareness, and basically what does your office do?
So we got involved in maritime domain awareness because of data that is collected from space. Maritime mission is a global mission, and as such, that requires access to parts of the globe that aren't easily accessible by any other means. So the Navy is invested in space for communications and other things, and part of that grew out of the need for maritime domain awareness and it being a global effort. And then taking that to the space realm so that we could collect information on assets from a global standpoint.
There's a fundamental, I guess, misunderstanding people might have when they think of the ocean, and that is we know what's out there, but the ocean's really big and ships are really tiny. So you really need the bird's eye view, would you say, to really understand the totality of what is going on?
We do need the bird's eye view, and the maritime domain is ever-changing. It's not like you build a building and it's there. The ports remain in the same place. But the ships, when they leave, they are not bound by any roads or other infrastructure. They are just bound for wherever they're headed to and tend to take a economical route from point A to point B to get there. And so we have to look everywhere all the time. So it's not just a bird's eye view, but it's an eagle eye view, and it's very difficult because everything's moving. And if you have things that don't collect in an omnidirectional sense, which imagers don't, and a lot of other systems don't, you have to be there and very persistent, or it's a very challenging problem. And that's why it is a challenging problem, because we don't have that persistence yet.
Got it. And let's talk about what assets the Navy does use to get its own maritime awareness picture from space. There's a lot of agencies that have satellites. Do you share what they're doing, or are there defense-related specific satellites that are only available to DOD, or how does that all work?
So some of the assets that we have access to are DOD-driven assets, DOD-operated. And we utilize those to the extent possible because that's already money that the government has spent on collection of those missions. So we try to utilize that again. And what we do is make sense of that information. We don't just take the picture and publish it. We try to make sense of what is in that picture. We also utilize now commercial partners with proliferation of space. We have a lot of commercial partners now that we can procure data from, so that comes at a cost. And some of them have missions like illegal fishing and others that are of great public interest that they're willing to give us the information at a very reduced cost, or potentially for free, at least to study the problems.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of open source and a little bit of federal DOD own sourcing of
data. That's correct. Yep, a little bit of each, and we try and get as much as we can from those other partners, but it does come at a cost commercially. And we do utilize not only DOD and federal assets, but down to the state and local levels.
Well, what do commercial imagery systems bring that is not available to the government otherwise?
They bring that persistence and that repeat coverage of an area. Or a part of the globe that is not being tasked by those other assets, right? These assets have only so much energy that they can use on orbit to do their collection mission. When you have an imager looking at a particular spot, you think that it has access to a lot, but it can only take several pictures while it's in that particular area and not take a picture of the entire area, right? We don't have fisheye lenses up there in space because you need some resolution at that range. And so we're not covering large swaths of the planet, by a single camera imager.
Got it. And also different orbits, I imagine, between the commercial operations and DOD operations and even some of the other federal operations. There's different orbit levels, and there's also different trajectories, polar versus equatorial.
There's not so many equatorial. There's always the day-night boundary. So most of them are in the polar orbits that are called sun synchronous, and they remain at a constant sun clock angle. So as the Earth orbits the sun 1 degree a day roughly, those orbits rotate with respect to the Earth by about that exact same 1 degree per day, so that they are always flying over when it's 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. And there's different ones. And the commercial satellites, as you mentioned, do have different orbits than the national and DOD satellites.
And let's talk about what the Navy actually considers the elements that it needs, the information it needs to have full awareness. I mean, clearly and obvious, if China sends 44 ships in a certain direction, well, you probably care about that. But there must be a lot more to it. And to what extent do you integrate what's happening by man-made means on the surface and what's going on naturally that might affect things?
So we do overlays of information like weather that does impact normal patterns of life. We do have analytics that look at typical behavioral patterns. We rely on getting as much information as we can on a regular interval as we can so that we don't lose custody of an object. Once you lose custody and you're tracking all over again from the beginning, so to speak, that becomes the challenging part of the problem.
So that's why that persistence is important. And also, I imagine coverage and handoff from one spot to the other, because if there's something suspicious, like you say, you don't want to have it disappear.
That's correct. And we don't track these only through imagery. We track them through electronic means as well, particularly AIS, a ship-based system that's used for safety of navigation that is collected both from shore-based systems and from space. And those are identifying who it is with a MIMSI number.
Right. So then there is the sense that you need to have the picture over time to know what a thing is doing, where it's going.
That's correct. That's the patterns of life. We want to understand when somebody leaves point A, how did they get to point B for the safety of the economy of the United States and things that are inbound. Ships are required to report previous ports that they've been to. So certain agencies are looking to ensure that those vessels did go there. And if you don't have those persistent tracks, monitoring, understanding where they have been versus what they're reporting, we could end up with a big mess in our hands.
And just a technical question or a technology question, I've heard that there is some convergence of satellite systems and imagery with unmanned aerial vehicles, which are easy to launch. You can bring them back. They have increasing ability to stay aloft for a long time. Are you looking at that as information gathering platforms, drones, so to speak, that can fly high, they can fly low, some of them can stay up for a long time and give you that persistence?
Absolutely. We rely on whatever we can to collect that information. The hard part is sometimes tying it together between the different stovepipes of information and where that information is destined to go to based upon who it supports. So at the Naval Research Lab, we're trying to broker those relationships and make sure that those partners also put that data into the bigger data pool so it can be used by the federal government and other federal organizations so that we have the most information possible at our hands that's already been paid for.
It must be difficult to separate the noise from the real important information. I'll make an analogy. I love Flight Radar 24, for example. But you look at that screen when you put it on your phone, and it looks like the Earth is covered with airplanes. Thousands of planes are aloft at a given moment. But it's kind of an undifferentiated blob of yellow, objects just buzzing around the Earth. I imagine that's true in certain areas of the maritime domain, where you're near marinas or near ports or near fishing areas. So the wheat from the chaff must be a challenge.
It is. And we use analytics and patterns of life and things that we can use to identify those objects of particular interest. Our adversarial naval vessels, right? They are out there and they have always potential harm that could be caused to our surface fleet. And then there are the innocuous vessels that just behave by the rules. And so how do we tell those two apart? We look for things that are violating the norms. We have analytics that can look for rendezvous at sea. We have analytics that can look for people that loiter out at sea. It's not a typical behavior. As I said, ships are out there. Commercial shipping is there to make money. So they want to get from point A to point B with the minimum amount of fuel and the minimum manpower required and avoid storms and things. So if it's not explainable by weather or some other anomaly that is known, deviations from normal patterns are what we're looking for out there to find those needles in the haystack.
And to some extent, you know, naval vessels of the various world navies look alike. And is there the danger that you could mistake one for the other, England for the United States or China for England or whatever?
Absolutely. And that's
gray is gray.
We call those the gray hulls, and then red forces and blue forces. So England would be part of blue forces. And there's, the operators out there that use these maritime domain awareness tools that we put out there and transition out to industry and federal partners, utilize that to help them understand what's going on and make those determinations.
Now, you are part of the naval research apparatus, and that's not really within a combatant command, for example. And so what's the relationship operationally between what the naval research facility that you head up is doing and operational tactical needs of the moment that might be occurring in the Navy?
So you're right. We are not part of an operational combatant command. We are a part of the Naval Research Enterprise. And as such, our job is to find those hard problems that are out there that the Navy and DOD needs to solve to get to the next level of understanding and apply our tradecraft and what we know and advanced mathematics and concepts and computer techniques so that we can help with those problems. And then we transition those out to those warfighter echelons that are part of those combatant commands that need that information so that they can operate and do their job safely.
Alan Hope is branch head for the Space Systems Development Department at the Naval Research Laboratory. We'll be back with more of the interview after this short break. You're listening to Federal News Network. I'm Tom Temin.
Planet's satellite data provides unmatched coverage of the Earth's waters. With global daily satellite imagery, you can monitor ports and coastlines, detect and track vessels, and uncover suspicious activity in contested waters. Learn how government bodies, coast guards, border security, and environmental agencies are leveraging Planet to monitor and protect their waters at go.planet.com/MDA. That's go.planet.com/MDA.
Welcome back to my interview with Alan Hope, branch head for the Space Systems Development Department at the Naval Research Laboratory. Our topic is maritime domain awareness and what ships and vessels are, in fact, in the ocean at a given time and where they're going. And before the break, we were talking about the problems and the challenges that the Navy has from a combatant standpoint that it relies on, in part, the Naval Research Laboratory and your unit to kind of help them solve. What are some of the maritime domain challenges do you think the Navy's trying to get around?
Well, one of those is the combination of various types of data into singular tracks. That aids with the persistence. It is a difficult problem. And because the different data that is collected has different characteristics to it, as people say, a picture's worth 1,000 words. It's only worth 1,000 words after an analyst has looked at it and written those up to 1,000 words, and then you have that text that goes with the image, or an analyst has to look at it. With proliferation of space, we just don't have enough analysts to look at all that. So we are moving into the arena of artificial intelligence and machine learning, where we're able to take and look at these maritime objects from spacecraft imagery and be able to categorize them and classify them. So we are building training data sets where we are taking known vessels and trying to do that. But you're absolutely right. There is some ambiguity between ships that look pretty much the same but are slightly different, and making those fine distinctions from those space-based platforms.
Well, are you looking at simply the optical layer of a thing from the different satellite assets, or are you looking at maybe other characteristics like the heat profile, for example, that could maybe give you a sense of the propulsion for system that it's using, and therefore you can triangulate in on what it actually is?
We're not using infrared imagery today to do any of that recognition of combatant versus non-combatant vessels.
Simply optical.
It's optical, and like I said, other RF means through things like automatic identification system.
The signals coming off signals, of that particular thing.
The signals that they are broadcasting, yes, to be able to sort out who's who.
So the issue then is getting assurance to a reasonable degree that that's what we think it is, it actually is. Is that the chief challenge?
That is the chief challenge. So at NRL, what we're doing is we're putting together the different data types into hopefully singular tracks that aren't without errors. But even with humans in the loop, there are errors that are made on occasion. So the analysts have the ability to go back and correct the system if it makes a wrong decision, or add their tradecraft by looking at that image and saying, I know that is the good ship Lollipop, and putting that label on it because the system wasn't able to do that before that.
Yeah, because what I'm getting at is if you have, say, a commercial imagery partner that you're buying data from and they're seeing that object, and then a naval satellite is seeing that object, and then maybe a NOAA satellite or something is seeing that object, and you have all that data available, all that imagery available, how different would those be then if you're just looking at, say, the RF outline and the visual outline?
They can be very different because the resolution of the image varies from satellite to satellite based upon its orbit. What an object looks like, you can just go look for yourself in Google Maps and see sometimes you've got long shadows on things, and when there's not a high contrast background, when you just have a ship on the ocean and white caps around it potentially or waves, sometimes it's very difficult to distinguish what that is, but we try and get the basic characteristics based upon the resolution, like length and width, to understand what it is and put those further labels on it, at least to categorize it, whether it is a combatant vessel, a commercial vessel, and if it's commercial, what type of commercial vessel it is, whether that's fishing or cargo or like natural gas type
sure.
of tanker.
So it would seem then that the closer you can get to it, and maybe the drone idea of maybe flying around it, that would give you the ultimate answer.
And the operators out there that do have access to those drones, that's what they typically do, is when an object is unknown and they want to get more information, they utilize those localized assets. But, you know, when you're there's two problems. There's the localized problem, which a combatant commander has his area of regard that he's responsible for, and then they pay attention to that. But there's always the handoff when it comes from a different AOR into your AOR and understanding what it is. That's why we've taken it to the next level, which is just dealing with this on a global basis and understanding what you can. And then as you bring in these other assets that help define it, that information's persistent on those tracks. So if we never lose custody, we have all that information that was collected by all of these different means with different resolutions that analysts can look at to come up with a thumbs up. That's what I'm looking for. That's not what I'm looking for.
And as we know from terrorist organizations or, you know, people that don't have the United States' best interest at heart, sometimes there could be the orchestration of flotillas and this kind of thing, of maybe very small vessels. We've seen Iran do this kind of thing. Can, with a unified picture and having one that's persistent over time, do you have the tools, I imagine maybe analytical tools or AI tools, that can piece together from a lot of disparate dots? Wait a minute, that's a whole group forming and going that way. I'm making that up, but that type of analysis.
That's where we're working today on those, one of those future hard problems as to how do we track that and understand that it's happening. So when we have instances of it where it did occur and we can go back in time and look at it, that's where we're able to train those artificial intelligence and machine learning things against those problems. And so we try to make a set of tools that is usable by the operators out there and not the PhD scientists that we have at NRL that can go out there and use those tools to help them assist solving their own problems that way.
And just out of curiosity, what's your own background that you got to this particular station here at the in the Naval Research Enterprise.
So I have a master's degree in aerospace engineering with a specialty in astrodynamics. So my
that's how you knew about that 1% tilt every day.
That's right. I understand how things fall in space very well, and that led into a lot of systems engineering work at the Naval Research Lab for systems that we've worked with over the years. I had the opportunity in 1994, I worked on the Clementine mission that the DOD flew. NRL built that mission. It was the first faster, cheaper, better mission out there. We went to the moon. It was the first all-digital mapping of the moon from pole to pole in high resolution. And so I worked on that team and doing the maneuver planning and mission planning of where it was going to be. That led to working on other programs, doing other systems engineering, testing payloads. And then opportunity came about that we needed a new lead for the maritime domain portfolio that we were doing. And I had enough tools in my toolbox that I was a high-value candidate, and my leadership asked me to take on that role. And I've been doing that since, like, 2011.
Wow. So the theme here is that, yes, you need great imagery that can be interpreted to give commanders an assurance of what they're looking at. But underneath all of that, there's a really complicated apparatus of orbital dynamics, image processing, and a lot of capabilities that enable that ultimate delivery.
That's correct. It's sort of understanding that systems engineering aspect of the whole problem, right? Satellites don't stay fixed over a certain spot of the Earth except our geostationary satellites, and they're too far away to really take good pictures. So, right, when we kind of look at it from that aspect, you have this problem of revisiting things at the proper resolution and revisit to cover the objects that we need to. And there's literally millions of things out on the sea every day moving around. I wish they stayed still for us. It'd be great advantage to us. But they move each and every minute, but not very fast. But if you don't revisit them every so often, you sort of lose track of where they're at, and it becomes a whole new problem of rediscovery of, is that the guy I saw yesterday, or is it a new person out there that I need to be aware of?
Just a detail question. Can a ship disguise itself? Suppose it knows it's being watched. Can they paint it overnight, rearrange things on the deck or something?
They can. And they probably do try to do some of those things. Ship names and ownership changes on a regular basis, right? So that's database information that's dynamic. But ships can do that to obfuscate it. We're usually not reading the name off the side of the ship. We're looking at the bigger characteristics, which are much harder to mask. But could you add 10 feet to the deck by putting plywood out there? You sure could. Is it enough to change what the picture looks like and take it out of the realm of possibilities of what it is? And it's a probabilistic game. So unless you can change it drastically, and if you put your ship underneath the water, it either was a submarine or we already won, and it's no longer a threat to us out there because it's no longer on top of the water.
At that point, we've annihilated it.
Or they annihilated themselves.
Maybe a few words on what comes ahead here.
So NRL's looking at continuing research and has a continued investment in basic and applied technologies that we developed to transition out to the DOD warfighter, the Navy, and other federal organizations that are in need of that technology.
Alan Hope, branch head for the Space Systems Development Department at the Naval Research Laboratory. To hear this interview again, read a transcript, or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Planet Federal on Federal News Network.